from stpetecatalyst.com.
Hi there, my name is Bill DeYoung. This is the Catalyst Sessions. That's David M. Jenkins there from Jobsite Theater. As if you didn't know, hello, sir.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. We got lots to talk about today. You're taking to the stage once again this weekend.
Yep. As a Friday night, we've got the complete works of William Shakespeare, abridged, revised, up on the Straz Riverwalk stage outdoors. And actually, three more dates just went on sale this morning because the show's selling so well.
Ahead of me, but yes.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. That's fine. It's something to celebrate. It starts Friday.
Yeah.
They call it the Riverwalk stage. Is that right?
That is correct.
I think I may have called it the Curtis Hickson stage somewhere, but six to one, half a dozen the other. It's fine in the building.
If you threw a rock really hard and you had a really great arm, you might be able to hit Curtis Hickson from the Riverwalk stage. Maybe.
Oh, okay. I stand corrected. I'm a St. Petersburg guy. This is great, though. Let's talk about the dates specifically. You put them on sale, and how many people get to – what's the capacity for the show?
I believe it's a total of like 40-something tables out there. So I believe it's a little over 100 folks out there on the – and then it's sort of like three tiers of seating, three levels that are out there. But I believe it's a little over 100 people total that can be accommodated out there. Of course, now we have – because we're selling tables and yeah. If somebody wants to buy a four-top and come by themselves because they just don't want anyone near them, they're more than welcome to do that.
Do you have some idea, like – has that happened? I mean, oh yeah, the lonely guy sitting over here and the old spinster wants her on the table.
I know a woman specifically asked about buying a two-top table and she just wanted to come by herself. And I've known some couples that have purchased four-top tables and they just plan on coming by themselves. And so they just want a little bit more room. And so that's why we priced it so low to let people kind of do what they want. They're buying the table.
The idea, obviously, is to allow people as much space as they'll be comfortable with.
Exactly. That's 100% the idea.
Right.
We understand that some folks are, you know, a little bit more reticent than others. Some folks are a little bit more willing than others. And this is a way for us also to just really make sure that we're obeying all of the recommendations and everything. And so, you know, we're not allowing people to move tables. We're not allowing people to move chairs. It's all been really specifically gridded out with, you know, measuring tapes and everything else. And so we just don't, that's what's most important right now.
So it's very scientific. I think that's interesting, but I don't know that space specifically. I mean, is it how high, how raised is the stage out there?
The stage itself is about 5 feet off the ground. And the seating goes up. It's almost a little stepped. Now, I would not go so far as to call it an amphitheater by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, when you exit Carol Morsani Hall at the Straz Center, there's naturally a downgrade that goes down the Riverwalk. And so some of the seating actually goes up that sort of, you know, step, that slope. But even at ground level, the stage is about 5 foot above that ground level.
The stage is down where the river is what you're saying.
And it's got this really cool elevator roof on it. So, you know, when the show's over, the whole thing comes down and the lighting grid's in here and it sits like a clamshell. And then when it's time to go, you know, it does.
Oh, yeah.
It raises up.
What are we looking at here? I mean, we're looking at adaptability here. You must be really excited just not only, and I want to talk about this, not only to actually get on a stage again and do what you guys do, but that you've adapted and it's safe. And look, we made something out of nothing with this stage.
Yeah. And I know that this outdoor stage, what the Straz Center is thinking, they've got opera stuff coming up out there. There's community events happening out there. They've got us out there. And I'm not sure that they really thought that this stage was going to get this much use when it went up, I believe, in September. So, you know, there's some challenges with doing a show like that outdoors, mostly sound. you know, because it's, you know, you're outside and you want to make sure that that sound travels. So we've been working really closely with the production staff there to make sure that, you know, it's going to sound good as well as look good. And yeah, I mean, adapting, it's, we started talking about possibly doing something outdoors all the way back in April when we thought maybe we were still only going to be shut down for 4 to 8 weeks.
Yeah. I'm not going to say the dreaded W word, which is weather.
Well, you know, it is what it is. We live in Florida. The great thing I think is that so like this weekend's forecast looks awesome. Low 60s overnights, right? We don't stand a strong chance for rain, but you know, of course we live in Florida and anything can happen. And if it does happen, it happens, right? Like, I mean, there's
could rain frogs, man. Yeah, in Florida.
Right. Yeah. It's 2020, man. Don't threaten it.
Yeah. Right. I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, right. But, tell me about this show. I mean, I may be one of the very few theater fans in America who has not seen the complete works of William Shakespeare abridged. And I know it's three people, and you are one of them.
Yep.
So what's the premise here?
So long story short, it's three guys basically trying to plow and do the most ambitious performance ever thought of in the history of civilization, and that is to perform the entire complete works of William Shakespeare in an hour and a half. And you know, so there's some problems with that. Like we haven't actually read most of these plays. And right, we're making it up as we go along. Right. And you know, like the beautiful thing about a show like this is it really depends on the three performers you have in it. It's largely based in improv and in current events. The playwrights actually encourage you to change things up and to find things that work best for your local your location, and that's obviously very rare. So even, you know, when you see it in different cities and different times, the show is always kind of completely different, but, it's kind of presented sketch style. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some of them are very specific sketches, like Titus Andronicus is performed as an Emeril Lagasse style cooking show.
Don't give too much away.
Oh no, that's not really giving much away, right? Like, so each play sort of ends up getting, its own treatment, and sometimes the plays are combined. Sometimes we even rely on the audience to help us. Obviously we're keeping distance, but it's basically a ton of fun. And what we like about it, I've been doing the show for almost 20 years.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't matter if you love or hate Shakespeare, you're going to find stuff to find funny in it. You know, it's sort of the laughing at laughing with mentality of it. Yeah. I think that there are these little bon mots in there that if you are a Shakespeare aficionado, you kind of get to go, I got that joke.
I know a few of those people. Yeah.
Right. I know.
So was there a show? Let me ask you this. I mean, I want to talk about, you know, the shows that are coming up in the Jabe too, but was it kind of a no-brainer on like, was there a short list of shows we can do on the outdoor stage?
Yes.
And this only has a cast of three.
Right.
I've done it before.
One, two, and three on the list.
Yeah. And because you didn't want a huge cast, but they also wanted it to be more than the single performer shows.
Correct.
At the Jabe.
We knew we wanted it, something that was actually going to be able to effectively engage an outdoor audience, right? Like, that's different. It's different than being in a theater. We might have people walking down the Riverwalk that are like, hey, dude, you're wearing a wig. You know, like, we have to be prepared for that.
That'll be me.
Right. We have to be prepared sort of for anything. And also the unknown of going back on stage after so long. This show is perfect for that because we can react to anything occurring in the moment in an improvised way. There is no fourth wall. We're ourselves up there, unless we're being one of the Shakespeare characters. Like, we use our own names and stuff. We don't need a set. We don't need much fancy. You could literally pack the show up in a trunk and do it anywhere. Also, the three of us, here's another thing, the three of us, to put this show together, we knew it was gonna be really easy. So we did some rehearsals over Zoom, just to make sure we remembered all the words. We've gotten together a couple of times in person, and Sean Spencer and I are practically best friends. So, you know, there's a level of trust there. We have a quarantine thing going on, you know, and that also matters, that the three of us are comfortable with each other in this time right now.
What do you mean you have a quarantine thing going on? That went over my head.
We have a quarantine. you know? So we've basically...
A quarantine. Oh, kid. Yeah.
Yeah, we've all basically made an agreement that for this period of time, not that any of us were going out or doing anything before this, but when you put together a show like this, otherwise you're just kind of trusting people, right? Like, okay, nobody's going to do anything dumb. Mm-hmm. But we got together and said, okay, look, like from now through, let's make sure that you know, we can trust one another to not go out, to make sure we're doing all the right things, to make sure we're being healthy. And you know, I really, that's not like business talk. Spencer, Sean, and I are like pretty much, you know, BFFs. So.
Is there a director? I mean, is there a fourth person in all this? Who's that?
Yes. Katrina Stevenson, who directed the original production back 20 years ago that I was in. And then Sean was a replacement for the original person in that slot 1 year after. But Sean's been with the show for the remaining 19 years. And Spencer just joined the show last year. So Katrina's directed the show a lot. She also did all the costumes. She also did all the props. Yeah. She's also running the show for us backstage. Speaking of a quarantine thing, she's the one backstage helping us as we're running around in a circle, putting props in our hands, grabbing a wig off our head, and doing all that. So
that's
she's
the team. Know, yeah. Well, so it's Spencer Myers, is it? And who's Sean now?
Sean Panessa. I'm not sure if you've actually, Sean hasn't been on stage in a while. Last for Jobsite, he directed 1984.
Wow.
So Sean's actually kind of, I think, directed more recently than he's been on stage, but he, obviously we did Abridged just as part of our 20th anniversary season. Mm-hmm. And so if you would have seen that production, you would have seen him in that.
So it's wild. It's wacky. It's frenetic.
Yeah, it's silly. It's, you know, it's a little bit SNL. It's a little bit, you know,
it's so, a little bit country, it's a little bit rock and roll, that kind of thing.
Right. It's you know, it's a crowd pleasing, fun show, and it flies. And you know, what's kind of more funny than watching three doughy, aging white guys sweating to death outside and falling down and all that, right? Like, you know, you can, we're really easy to laugh at.
So popular that you just, was it today? You added what, three more performances?
Yep. That's right.
Do you have the list of dates in front of you? Because I don't. I
got them up here.
Oh, well, let's have it, man.
So now the added dates are October 8th, 16th, and 17th. So that adds, we have October 2nd, 3rd, 8th, 9th, 10th, and then 16th and 17th. So it's a 3-weekend run. We're mostly, it's just the Fridays and Saturdays, except for the second week, which we were able to add a Thursday night show. But other than that, that's it. We can't add any more. Obviously the Straz is looking forward to a lot of other programming that's going out there. And I think they just added dates for their opera, Halloween spooktacular that they're doing, the Witching Hour. I'm pretty sure I saw that they're also adding. So it seems that people do have an appetite to come back, at least to this outdoor theater setting, and that's really exciting.
Something that just occurred to me, and you're welcome to slap me down if this is wrong, but if you played 100 people each show, that's like a decent run at a job site.
Yeah, it's similar. Absolutely. Yeah. The Riverwalk stage... Mm-hmm. Even with the social distancing, with all the tables set far apart from one another, I believe we're at around 100 seats. And so that's roughly what we could do inside the Schimburg, and actually more than we could do inside the Schimburg right now. We could only get 26 people if we wanted to try to do that. So,
what's it been like for you? We've talked way too many times probably in the last six months about how doubt was sort of left there teetering on the edge when all this happened.
Right.
You haven't acted in 6 months.
No. I haven't.
Is it like riding a bike? Does it all just come back immediately?
Yeah, it is. And you know, my mood's increased. Like, woo, I'm in such a better mood. But I, you know, like my thighs hurt a lot more because this show's really physical, and I'm like, man, I'm really out of shape. You know, because I really haven't. I spent a couple of months eating my feelings, right, and so. Mm-hmm. Managed to get rid of a couple of pounds I've gained in quarantine. I'm hoping the show does some more of that. But it is like riding a bike. You know, the show came back so fast. Even, you know, it's been over a year. I feel like this is a show that somebody could call me in 20 years from now and be like, hey, Jenkins, we got an open spot. And I could just like kind of cruise in and do it. You know, I mean, that's really wild to think about. Like, if you've kind of done one show for like 20 years, not saying every year, sometimes we skip 3-4 years between doing it. Sometimes we do it a lot within a given year.
I wonder if Hal Holbrook would wake up and say, I can't do that.
Exactly.
I can't do that Mark Twain thing one more damn time, you know?
Right. Yeah. So that it's good. I'm really happy to be kind of getting back to things.
Yeah.
You know, I'm constantly in this state of like clenching though, because it's like, oh God, are we going to, no, don't Florida. No. You know, DeSantis came out on Friday and made the announcements about phase 3, which I think has already interjected some confusion into people's brains.
Yep.
What's going on? And we're like, we are not changing anything. Everything is still exactly the way it was on Thursday. Yes, you still have to wear a mask. No, we're not going to add seats in, you know, in the empty spaces. Like, you know, businesses can still maintain their own health and safety practices.
I think at this point, it's really up to one's own sense of safety and conscience to say, okay, well, you know, they're opening restaurants, I'm not going, you know, that kind
Right. And it's similarly, the businesses that are stepping up and saying, you know what, we're not comfortable doing that other stuff.
Right.
Yet. We're going to stay at whatever our percentage is.
Let's talk about the Jabe shows. Frankenstein, the Modern Prometheus, which is later in October, I guess.
Yep.
Giles Davis show. The LA one, which is called Twilight Los Angeles 1992. I had to look because I would say it wrong if I didn't. Tickets going well for those? Is there a big interest in those as well?
Yeah, you know, Giles is obviously one of our better known performers. He has a following here locally. Even people that don't necessarily come see a lot of job site shows will show up when Giles is on stage. So, you know, it sort of behooves us to keep putting him on stage. It's a show that Giles is bringing to us because it's a performance he's done before several times. He did it at Cincinnati Shakespeare when he was working up there. I believe there was one other venue he had done it at. And so this is like a showcase piece he's done quite a bit. And so he came to us and said, hey, you know, like, I'd love a chance to get this back up. And it just so happened that Judy Lisi at the Straz, we were looking at the calendar with stuff going on, and she's like, well, if he wants to get in there over Halloween weekend, we just need to, you know, do some creative engineering on the schedule. So we'll actually be teching Patsy Cline during the mornings while he is doing his Halloween weekend engagement at night, which is, you know, we're entering this rep situation, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Twilight Los Angeles 1992 is a piece that I had passed by Andrezia Mosley originally back when we were working on Doubt together. And I was like, man, I really think this would be a great script for you. Yeah. Originally it was conceived, pieced together and originally performed by Anna DeVere Smith. And she has a lot of these sort of like social drama pieces that she's done in a one person setting. And Andrezia read it, also similarly fell in love with it. And then, you know, like we hit this moment, this civil rights moment over the past 7 months as well. We've also been dealing with quarantine, and I believe it just made the show and what the show has to say so much more relevant. You know, to go back and look at all of the monologues in Twilight are real transcriptions of real interviews with real people. So some of the characters in the show are like Maxine Waters, Bill Bradley, Charlton Heston, as well as no-name folks that were, you know, person on
so
the street.
It's early 90s. It's like Rodney King era? Is that what
it absolutely is. It covers that entire summer, and it was not, you know, we have this memory now, and we think about just the Rodney King incident, but there were many incidents over that summer. The beating of Reginald Denny, Latasha Harris, her murder. There were all of these little events that
wow,
you know, occurred over that summer, some of them unrelated to one another. But of course the racial tensions and the sort of uprising that occurred that summer. And man, if, you know, sadly, in most cases, the conversations that folks were having then, I'm not sure what's very different right now.
And Andrezia, just to recap, Andrezia is the only person on the stage.
Yeah. Same thing with Frankenstein. Giles is the only person on stage. So, you know, Giles ends up playing pretty much every character in Mary Shelley's novel, Frankenstein. Mm. You know, the captain in the Arctic, the doctor Frankenstein, the creature, Frankenstein's professor, like, you know, everyone, the guy in the hut, like all the characters in the novel, Giles ends up embodying from one sort of section of the story to the next. And in Twilight, Andrzeja plays like there's about 32 monologues that come from the point of view from about 20-ish different individuals that Anna DeVere Smith interviewed for the production. So they're both these, you know, tour de force acting pieces. And this was important moving into an indoor situation. How do we keep people away from each other? How can we operate safely? And so one person shows are something that make that a lot easier to do. Whether it's, you know, from the audience perspective of feeling safer with the distance and not having, you know, 50 people singing at me indoors, or even the performers themselves having the stage to themselves. Sure. For a matter of health and safety, which
well, let's you know, reiterate the tickets for all of these performances are available via the website, which is jobsitetheater.org, I think, isn't it?
Yep. Good job.
Org. You mentioned before about your mood changing, about a certain weight lifting off your shoulders when you were able to do this.
Yeah,
And we did a series called The New Normal over here a while ago, which maybe it's an overused phrase, but at the same time, it was different people in different businesses dealing with, you know, the pandemic, 6 months into the pandemic, you know, how are things changed? Even since month two or three, how are you doing now? You're much more optimistic than you say were, because this is your third time on the Catalyst set.
Yeah.
We've run the gamut, you know?
Yeah, I'm beginning to be able to see paths, right? Like I'm beginning to be able to see, okay, you know, even if we can't do this thing, we can do this thing. Like, you know, in us exploring what can we do in terms of getting the rights to digital streaming, right? Yeah. Like that's becoming clear because the world's adjusting a little bit. And so certain authors are getting a little bit more savvy to it. And so we're seeing some things get brokered. I wish Actors Equity Association would kind of take the same approach to some of these things. But, you know, that means it's getting clearer that maybe we won't be able to use union actors for a while. Like,
Equity's still like, no.
Right. The union stagehands are completely allowed to work. IATSE, they haven't stopped working. There are obviously conditions and things that they deal with. But you know, it's one more thing that allows us, okay, the path's a little bit clearer. We can do this, like this thing we've worked out. We've got the digital content. We've got the one person shows in the Jade. We've got the outdoor performances. Okay, this is getting clearer. This is getting clearer.
Instead of just sitting home on the couch and shaking.
Like, from moment to moment. Now, we have to be able to pivot on a dime. And, you know, Florida's the Florida out of this within a month or two, and we all get locked back up. Well, then, you know, that's what happens, you know, like, or if it rains through the weekend and we can't do the outdoor show, then okay. Like, I think I'm gaining some level of as a human, I can embrace uncertainty, if that makes any sense. As a human, as a regular old dude, I kind of do embrace uncertainty and I'm okay with that. But as a producer, like, I mean, that's one thing a producer can't do is embrace uncertainty, because we need to know, like, we need to know what's going on.
Well, it plays havoc with planning, certainly.
Right. And money, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm
other people's money. Sometimes.
Right.
Yeah.
Gaining a better sense of acceptance over these things. And, you know, that's important. And I'm still very hopeful. There's a lot of awful, ugly stuff happening in the world. There is still great uncertainty and mismanagement of this crisis health-wise that's going on right now. But I because I'm not sitting and despairing, because we are moving forward in a safe and sane manner, right? And I'm, you know, yeah. I'm getting people back to work, which was one of the things that I really wanted to do at the onset of all this, is I was getting really depressed feeling
yes.
a producer well, producing.
What a great segue to talk about your digital shorts, though, which mm-hmm. is a way that you said of paying people. You know, can you give me like the one sheet on the digital shorts? Because there's what 3, 4, 5 of them up on the site now.
Yep, we're getting there. So you know, when we realized that the appetite was not really there for Zoom plays with our audience, at least, maybe other theaters, and I do know other theaters are having much better luck with that.
Some of them are doing okay, yeah.
Right, and we weren't, you know. Mm-hmm. There wasn't the appetite there for people to want to pay to partake in a reading over Zoom or a performance over Zoom.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the futility started to sink in. Why will we keep doing this if people don't want to pay for it, right? Like, you can do a couple of things because it's something in goodwill, it's something to do, but how is this helping? What is this accomplishing in terms of paying these artists and all this other stuff? So we tried some content that was tip-based that the performers could create from home, again, on their own. And yeah. we realized that, you know, and I don't blame people, when you release content like that and then ask for a tip, you're probably not going to get it, right? So we weren't really getting donations from those videos that we had said if a video gets tips, it'll go directly to the artist. And that didn't really happen. So
what's different? Tell me what's different about what you're
paywall.
Doing.
We're everything's behind a paywall. The only way you can watch it is if you pony up and you pay your $1.99 or whatever to stream the content. And what we're doing is we're telling the artist straight up that there is a guarantee that we will pay you for this content. And the content can be, you know, right now we're playing between 5 and 30 minutes. So it could be anything from like a music video length to a 30-minute performance of something that is recorded and edited and then put on put behind a paywall. So we have a streaming on demand website that folks can go to. They can look through the list of what are the episodes within mm-hmm. our digital short series. They can watch trailers for what these things are about for free, obviously. And then if they choose to click that play, you know, they have the option of either renting it for a period of a month or they can purchase it and watch it forever. But there is a paywall there. So it's, you know, it's an on-demand paywall service. And then if, you know, any of the money that these individual videos make go back directly to the folks who are creating the content. So we're guaranteeing them, an amount of money up front based on the amount of time we believe that it was going to take them to create the content as well as the number of people involved. So we basically came up with this is if we were going to, you know, say a minimum hourly rate would be X and you've got Y folks and it's going to take you Z number of hours, then can we agree upon this advance that we'll give you to do it? And then if the video ends up making more money than that, we'll continue to just keep giving you anything you make on that video.
So this came out of your budget, right? I mean, didn't we hear that?
We're just paying for this outright because we believe it's the right thing to do. We're not in a position, we can't just cut artists a bunch of checks for nothing. But we can pay them for work. And just like if we were going to produce a play and hope that people would show up for it, and you know we'd be covered because of the ticket prices we raise. Yeah. This is the same sort of thing, and because these short doses of things that are not what our audiences have shown they don't really want, which is Zoom plays, which is readings like that. Readings period do not appear to be something that our audience wants. Performances over Zoom do not appear to be what people want. So we're trying to find a way to give them what they want at the same time, because we know we can't create the Hamilton film for streaming content, right?
Well, by the same token, will Frankenstein and Twilight be, you know, recorded?
We do.
For later consumption?
We do not know. See, this is another thing where the industry is really trying to figure out what to do.
The rights thing, right?
There are union considerations. You know, when you have union personnel working on a show, you need a very particular kind of contract in order to record it. That needs to be done up front. It costs more money. And this goes to all the unions, not just the actors union. There are playwrights who do not allow for recording of the show in any way, shape, or form. There are, like, so for instance, we're trying to see what we might be able to stream next season. The Anthony Burgess International Foundation does not allow the recording of A Clockwork Orange, no matter what. There are all these weird intricacies with the Kubrick film, and so it's just legally not allowed. We're trying. We do not know yet whether Frankenstein or Twilight will be streamed. We're trying. You know, but there are a lot of other challenges with that. We don't want to release anything unless it looks great. We don't want to stand a camera up in the back of the theater and, you know, people are watching some fuzzy Giles moving around on stage with his face all whitewashed out. That's an additional expense to bring in people with equipment that know what they're doing and know how to use it and then edit it together. And then we have to balance out. Are enough people going to want to stream this thing to make
it? Pivot goes in all directions, right?
Right. And so we just don't know. We're going to try. We're thinking. But, you know, fundamentally, how much of everything have I just said in maybe past 20 minutes have come down to money, right? Like, we wish we had the resources to do more, but we're scrappy.
I've always admired your scrappiness, David. We are out of time, David M. Jenkins, who is the, are you the CEO? I know you're the artistic director. We call you the executive. Everybody's title is so
weird. I work out of my house and I wear shorts and t-shirts. I don't think you can ever call me a CEO of anything. CEO, I don't know. I'm producing artistic director.
Artistic director at Jobsite Theater, which is jobsitetheater.org.
Works.
You open, is it Friday in Shakespeare? The complete work, and it's sold out, right? So,
I believe there are a few seats.
Weekend, but check the website,
dates,
folks.
Right, and the new dates are, they just went on sale at 11 this morning, so.
Yeah.
We're hoping, you know, those will be around.
And this is the Riverwalk stage at the Stress Center and beyond. Go read about it on the website. David, always a pleasure. Next time we talk, let's talk about next year's season, and hopefully things will be even better and more promising than they are today. Yep. I can only hope, and with good reason. I think we'll have lots more to talk about then, too. Thank you for your time, my friend.
Always a pleasure to speak to the Edward R. Murrow of Tampa Bay.
Oh, he's so kind. Hey, break a leg this weekend, eh?
Take care, man.
From stpcatalyst.com.